Ahoy, ahoy, everybody. Welcome to yet another episode of Talk to the Audience. This is our this is the Talking Simpsons Patreons community podcast. I'm your host, Bob Mackey, and the other host is here, too, and he is...
Henry Gilbert, and I am now happy the PTA disbanded.
I'm still getting used to introducing a podcast with just two of us.
Yeah,
I don't want to make myself seem more important.
Oh, it's okay. You are more. You're the host.
That's right. I own this. I run this ship. You better shape up, Henry.
Oh, no.
So let's talk about a few things. We already did a Talk to the Audience podcast this earlier this month, but we actually missed it in November due to the holidays and being busy and stuff. So you're getting two this month to make up for the one we missed in November because we love you. And this is probably like the four... I don't know, like the dozenth bonus podcast we've done for Patreon this month.
I think we really made December worth it for the patrons.
I'm not complaining.
Our bonuses, yeah. I think I'm not. I loved every extra podcast we did. I think. I mean, those two interviews, like those just came out of nowhere just from good luck.
Yes.
And we might have another cool one coming. Yeah. So you listeners, if you didn't believe us when we were just like, we got some cool stuff coming, but we can't say. They're like, yeah, probably some Simpsons dork on some other website. Like, no.
Yeah. By the way, I was not complaining. I'm super proud of everything we've done this month, and I'm happy to make this a worthwhile proposition for people who want to give us their money.
Yeah.
And on that note... between this Talk to the Audience and the last one, the whole Patreon thing happened.
Woof,
and in case you don't realize it, in case you didn't hear the news, no changes will be made as of now.
Everything's the same.
Yes. The messaging was bad. Ultimately, it was very good for Patreon, slightly good for creators, and not very good for people giving money.
Much worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of. So what they planned to do and what would have gone live on December 18th. Was that Patreon was going to change the fee structure as it stands now and had been since as long as I've been using Patreon, is that when they charge somebody for their patronage, there then are credit card fees. It's why, you know, you go to a restaurant and they say, you got to have a $10 minimum. It's because they have to pay a credit card fee and it's not worth it to them for like a dollar. So we had to deal. We were paying those fees, which I was fine with. I did not give a crap that I was paying.
Yeah,
those fees.
I mean, we each give I think a lot to Patreon every month. We love Patreon. We love giving to creators, but we love bonus podcasts that other people make.
Yeah.
And I'd probably end up paying, I don't know, $7 or $8 more a month. But it's just like, well, I don't want to stop giving to these people, and I also want all the podcasts because I love podcasts.
Yeah, I think the issue was that they were going to put those fees on the patrons then instead of the creators, which would then add the if you for our $5 donation folks, that's $5.50 about was what it was going to change to, and the creators would have made more money. But the opposite thing was that some people didn't want that deal and they really hated that change, or it was, I don't want to sound like some fat cat who's just like, they're charging more money, it's nothing to me. It is something to some people. Like that money changes something to some people, and if it is, I feel for you, and if you'd have to cut patronage because of that, I would understand. But for me, just speaking for me as a patron of places, I would probably stay the same just because the people I patronize are because I love their content, and I hope that's why people listen to us too, because they like the content and want to support us.
Yeah, I mean, we're speaking from the position of Patreon elites. It's true, we're in the top 50 of podcasts on Patreon, and I'm proud of that, but also this change probably would have pushed us into the 8,000 range and gotten us to unlock that next podcast. But ultimately, I don't want people to pull their pledges away. I don't want people to distrust Patreon, and we can't change platforms. I've said it several times to people on Twitter, because as you said, as our fellow Retronaut Frank Cifaldi said, Patreon should pay me for doing their tech support all week, because they didn't send the message well, and people reacted poorly, as they should have, I think, because they weren't sure what this meant.
And they were basically silent for 10 days before fixing it, and their fixing it was just this thing they should have done like 3 days in, of just like, all right, I'm fixing it, I'm sorry. It's just like, you guys knew the bad reaction when it came. And the people, I definitely don't feel particularly bad for Patreon, because they brought this on themselves.
Yeah.
I feel bad for the smaller creators, especially the many people who depend on $1 patrons, who lost, like, I saw people showing 200 people left them. Like, they lost hundreds of dollars, which when they're only making like 1,000 or less, losing $200 fucking is a killer.
Yeah, like, it really is.
Quite literally, you might lose, you might not pay rent.
And we lost a few people, and I hope they came back. But all, I mean, ultimately, we are speaking from a position of privilege because of how successful this Patreon is.
Yeah.
Not to say that you're bad if you're not as successful as us, but we just have a, we had a built-in audience we've carried for like a decade now, so we're pretty privileged in that this wouldn't hurt us too much. But yes, the smaller people, the artists, the people that rely on $1 pledges, they were being affected the most. And for their sake, I'm happy that this change didn't happen. And I hope Patreon is okay with making tons of money for doing nothing instead of all the money for doing nothing. Because all they really have to do is host stuff and get rid of Nazis and hate things on their platform.
And just keep the lights on.
Yeah.
Like, that's all you need. And yeah, I worry that they are cursed with the tech bullshit that is at every website. That was
at
the website.
It.
We've seen it all.
We know how they think.
And they're the worst people. And I hope that Patreon doesn't fuck up a good thing. But yeah, when you talk about some people asking, like, well, what if you went to an alternative place? Or I'll go with you guys to an alternative place. I'm just like, well, as far as I know, for hosting podcasts, I don't know a similar thing to Patreon that is as good as Patreon is at servicing exclusive podcasts. And second, can we actually move 1,400 people to a new service? I don't think they'll all come. Like,
really, I mean, this sounds obvious. I don't think this is any great insight, but your Patreon is made or broken by the initial momentum. That is what carries you.
A runaway freight train.
Exactly. That's us. But that's what carries you into the future. And the momentum behind, hey, we quit our jobs and this is our new thing, is much greater than, hey, we're moving to this other thing and we're asking you to do a lot in order to go to that other thing. We would naturally lose people. They wouldn't be vindictive, but it's asking a lot to get people to change to another platform. I mean, there's so many things that I need to do online that I don't, just because it's just like, well, that's too much work, so I'll just put up with this for now.
I'm lazy.
Like, I subscribed to the wrong Patreon for a podcast I like, and I kept it going for like 2 months because I was like, that's too much work to edit my pledge. So yes, maybe that says more about me than the audience. But
anyway, In general, I want to thank everybody for their patronage. Bob and me had quite a fun Twitter back and forth the day we're recording this, just about, man, is it awesome we're not that old place, and how happy we are that all these people supported us more than any boss I've ever had.
Like, we've complained a lot about our old place, probably not enough actually, but
certainly not.
I was just reflecting today upon the fact that for months we were just trying to make a podcast, and they wouldn't let it happen because they had a pathological fear of making anything, because if you do a thing, you could have the potential to fail, and sitting on your hands as everything fails around you, it means you're not responsible. So
when I see it from their side of things, I see them as just like, well, if we make a podcast, then we have to get notes from every single person here because everyone is a fucking busybody who has to find a problem with something. And then we'd have to deal with that. And why not just make nothing? Why not just make a five? And also, they probably hear from every asshole in the company of just like, I got to listen to an hour-long thing to give you notes. Give me a two-minute thing.
Yes.
I barely want to watch that.
That's a huge thing, too. Just the shame of being part of a nerd organization.
They just can't stand it. They want to smoke their cigar. But whatever, fuck all
this
of
this is appropriate for the holiday. It is Festivus. This is the airing of grievances, and I will carry these in 2018 until that place goes down in flames.
Can't happen soon enough. But I reflect on this year, which in a macro sense was a horrible year for the world, and could be the continuing slide into just oblivion. But in a micro sense, this was a very good year for me personally. Like, I quit a job I hated. I got to say fuck you to assholes I hated. I got to make fun of Jonathan Blow and hurt his damage his reputation. And I got to start this Patreon.
Yeah.
And follow my dreams and be more, you know, successful at it than I have a natural hate of bragging, so I can't, it's hard for me to celebrate my success, but I do really appreciate it and all the support you guys have. And also, like, personally, you may have listened to me on a couple of these talk about a boyfriend. Like, yes, I am also in a relationship that I was not in at the start of the year. Moved in with him. It's been going really great. So this has been a very good year for me beyond all the horrible things.
I don't mean to Taylor Swift it, but it's also been a very good year for me. And I think just the combination of the bad job and also Trump getting elected just made me say, well, fuck it. Like, if everything is going to shit, I might as well try to make things better for myself and hopefully for the audience that's followed me this long. And I did most of the same things you do. I didn't get a boyfriend, Henry. I'm not gay yet. But I feel like 2017 was a great year for both of us, and I accomplished a lot of things, and 2018 I think is going to be even better, and I have some things that are coming up that I'll tell you in the future. I can't talk about them yet.
But there is the live show, since we're mentioning things in the future. Just again,
we forgot to talk about it in the last podcast. Yeah. I can't believe it.
But January 28th, 2018, just weeks away in San Francisco, if you can get to San Francisco, we are doing a show at the Piano Fight Bar, 5:30. I just actually sent an email off to the tech guy on it saying what we need for it, which is kind of small. We're not planning a big hullabaloo, no dance numbers, nothing like that. But we are planning something fun. I want to surprise folks. We plan to record it too, so if you can't make it, you'll be able to hear it. And we're not going to do a normal episode though, so it will be a different episode.
We don't know what it is yet, but we've got over a month to figure it out.
We've got some big plans. Maybe we can find some soiled mattresses. They're in abundance in San Francisco.
My God, that's true, but they are riddled with diseases. So, other news that happened between the last Talk to the Audience and this one is that Disney bought Fox.
It's quite some news.
Everything but Fox News Corp, which is the parent company. That's the parent company.
They didn't buy News Corp, which also means they don't own Fox News. They didn't buy Fox Sports, and they didn't buy the broadcasting channels because they already own ABC, so they can't own more network channels.
Yeah, what Fox News Corp, that is the parent company though, right?
News Corp, I believe, is the big company.
When I worked for 1UP under IGN like 5 years ago, I was technically a News Corp employee.
That's right.
And that entire building was just a museum of bad purchases they made. It's just like, here's where MySpace used to be, and here's where Photo Bucket used to be. And it's just like, well, what's going to happen to me?
Yeah, am I the next? Am I just waiting to be the next in this graveyard? And you were.
Yes, I actually remember making going to the abandoned Photo Bucket wing and making fun of Photo Bucket with a friend. I'm like, where's the actual Photo Bucket? Am I right? And then someone like peeks their head out of an office like way in the back. I'm like, oh my God, there's somebody here.
Oh God.
The last remaining Photo Bucket employee.
That sounds like from a Terry Gilliam film. Yeah. Like in Brazil, like, oh, I'm still here.
It's like technically we need to keep one person in this building. But yeah, Disney bought Fox, which means this is now a Disney adjacent show or a Disney show that we're doing here.
It's incredible that Disney has bought everything I like. Eventually, they will own everything. Their next step needs to be buying Shout Factory, so they own MST3K. So then everything I liked in 1993 belongs to them. Now, Star Wars, Spider-Man, Simpsons, MST3K. And then they got it all.
It's funny. I just listened to our Around Springfield episode that went up on Patreon, and two out of the three heads in the sky at the end of that are Disney properties now.
Yep.
So Mufasa and Darth Vader. James Earl Jones is still a living human not owned by a corporation yet.
Knocking on wood.
It may happen.
Yeah, I think it was pretty wild. Officially, what they bought was 21st Century Fox, which is the name of their media brands and all their studios. Another thing they didn't buy was the actual Fox Studios for filming space. But yeah, wrapped up in all of that is honestly too many things to count. Like when you think about it, you're like, oh yeah, Disney now owns Die Hard. Disney owns Aliens. Disney owns Family Guy and Bob's Burgers.
King of the Hill. I saw a great fan art of Hank Hill as Sora from Kingdom Hearts.
But they got back a lot of their Marvel rights. But for what's most important to this podcast is, yes, they own The Simpsons now, which is extra funny because for 30 years, they've made fun of Disney many, many times.
I just remembered, people are going to act like it's weird that we don't reference this purchase in the last few episodes we recorded. Because I remember there was, the PTA disband. Oh, God. Which one with Disney that we just did?
Oh, that's PTA disband.
Okay, so that was before the purchase. We're safe there. But people might ask why we didn't mention the purchase during the James Earl Jones cloud bits.
Yeah, or look, every episode up to Who Shot Mr. Burns was recorded on the week of ended at the week of the 13th. So if anything happens after that, like if any new horrible revelations happens or Disney buys another thing, sorry, it's not going to be in there.
Yeah, we do miss some things. In fact, on an episode of Talking Critic, I call Dustin Hoffman's performance touching. Mm-hmm. That was before allegations came out about him. Mm-hmm. So people were asking me, is that what I meant? I was like, no. I didn't know
you
yet.
You did not mean to make a horrible joke.
I would not make light of that in
certainly
that way.
Not, no.
I'd make fun of Dustin Hoffman for being gross, but I wouldn't make fun of the actual act.
I love that Dustin Hoffman, he still gets uncomfortable. And he's just like, it was the 70s. Like, yeah, you could do horrible things to women and not have to think about their feelings because it was the 70s. You weren't forced to. And a lot of these guys are just uncomfortable that they even have to think about women's feelings even slightly. That's why you see those things about, like, is hugging okay? It's like, why don't you ask the person instead of just hugging them, perhaps?
It is good that we're seeing people talk about these things. Not to sound too touchy-feely, but these are things I don't think about. And I was seeing articles that are like, adults, don't automatically hug every female relative you have. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't want to hug.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, as a sheltered white dude, you're still just like... You aren't made to have empathy. I'd say American society, I don't think, wants white men to have empathy. You'd be a lot sadder. You'd get fewer things done if you thought about how other people felt.
Yeah, and I just was thinking, like, I'm kind of culturally trained. It's like, okay, when I say goodbye to men, I shake their hand. When I say goodbye to women, I hug them because I'm supposed to.
Yeah.
They owe me a hug.
Oh, but back to the Disney-owning Simpsons Now thing.
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't know how we got this far off topic.
On the Disney-owning Simpsons thing, I got some good traction out of sharing jokes that I was like, Disney owns us now, and that included the movie joke of Bart wearing a bra on his head and saying, like, I'm the mascot of an evil corporation.
That's right.
And of course, Nazi men, Superman are our superiors, which
controversial 1939 film.
And there are tons more like that. I also love on the commentaries now, Disney employee, well, I guess technically Gracie Films employee through Disney, but Al Jean is very clear on the commentaries of, like, beats working for Disney. I hate working at Disney so much. Disney sucks. Like, Al Jean is one of the biggest Disney haters around. Like, Dave Merkin hates Disney as well, but I don't. Well, maybe he probably has worked for them at some point, but he never said it was because he had firsthand experience with them. Meanwhile, Al Jean, who made a fucking TGIF show and had an overall deal at Disney, he said multiple times on commentaries, I wish I was back at The Simpsons. I hate this job so much. I had so much freedom at The Simpsons. So, I mean, what does this mean for the future of The Simpsons?
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about this last night, and I don't want to be doom and gloom because I don't hate the new Simpsons. I've been watching a bit of it on Hulu lately, and I like it. It sounds way wrong without Alf Clausen. The new guy who does the music, or person, whoever does the music is fine, but it's not the Simpsons music. It has to come out of Alf Clausen's brain to sound right. Mm. That said, I feel like Disney, like any new executives coming in to take over a company, are going to see The Simpsons not as this legacy historic show, but as something that costs too much for what it is and what it makes, because you are not just paying for an animated show. You're paying for an animated show that has the associated costs of keeping people employed for 30 years, whose price only goes up year after year after year.
All of them do. You employ 800 producers. And also, when you don't own the Fox Network anymore, what do you care if you have, like, this is the diamond of the Fox Network? Well, it's not my network. What do I fucking care?
And they will never stop making merchandise. But I feel like it might be like the Flintstones or something, where the merchandise never died until recently. But every 5 years, you get a special, or the new Maggie and Gerald show where they have a rock band together. I really hope it doesn't turn into that. But I feel like I was looking at ratings, and the ratings seem okay for a broadcast show today. But it is probably like a $2 to $3 million episode cost for The Simpsons, with the cost-cutting measures that we see.
But, I mean, if they... Well, it's also the long tail. Every new episode they add is another thing they can syndicate, which will always make money. Not for any actor, because they could never get that sweetest plum, but they... It's also, I could see Disney, who have very different goals than Fox did for The Simpsons, would just say, we have 30 years of this. We'll license it forever. Maybe we'll make random new seasons here and there, or maybe we'll just make a second movie and just cancel the show. But I don't see it was the question of more seasons after season 30. They got renewed for 29 and 30. Barely, with Harry Shearer almost quitting.
Yeah. You guys did streams on Laser Time because it was clear at some point Harry was going to leave.
And we were sure it was then. But so you look at how difficult that was. I don't see why Disney would be like, why would we go through all this again to get a 31 and 32 season of the show? Why don't we just mothball it or make a movie and make new deals with these people?
I mean, every new episode in your syndication package is a good thing, presumably. But once you get to 700 episodes, what is 30 more? Like, does that really matter at that point when you already have more episodes than anything that anyone would ever watch? I mean, there are, I think, currently more episodes of Lassie, but no one wants to see Lassie.
No one wants to watch
Gunsmoke again.
Yeah, I could see them going the way of other 90s shows, though Simpsons is a forever show. But if you think of it in the terms of, like, compared to The X-Files, a then contemporary of The Simpsons, it got a new 6-episode season last year. It's getting another brief season next year.
Nobody seemed to care or notice.
I didn't particularly care for it, but it renewed interest in it. Like, I could also see them taking 5 years off and then just being like, and a new season of Simpsons is coming. Like, just let us miss it. And I don't know. It's the Simpsons' future is definitely in question now in the immediate. Its future for all time also is just like, well, how will Disney prioritize the Simpsons? Yeah. Where does it fit in their universe?
And ultimately, one of the cast members will die in our lifetimes, and I don't want them recast. You just can't do that. I mean, Disney
recasts everybody. Yeah. Like, you're Mickey Mouse for life, and or say Simpsons cast member Russi Taylor is Minnie Mouse for life. When she dies, you better believe they'll have a Minnie Mouse. They'll have Minnie Mouse and stuff like the day after she dies with a new voice actress. Like, that's just how the machine works.
True. It's true. I just can't see it happening with the show. The voices are too specific, and the actors own them so much, I think.
So much. Yeah. Yes. Especially their, like with Dan Castellaneta, all his improvisation is really, like, it wouldn't be it without him
secretly writing great lines for the show. And like
the finger thing means the taxes, that couldn't have been on a piece of paper.
I'm much less cranky about newer Simpsons than I was when I started this show, which is good because we're doing all of it.
Yep.
And I said watch the new ones on Hulu. I find there's a lot to like in there. And actually, I want to bring up that the 18th season just came out on DVD.
It's
really good. I mean, it's the new Simpsons. It's new meaning 10 years ago.
Yep.
So adjust your expectations. But I liked what I've seen of the first disc so far. And it is weird to see not only like a full Simpsons DVD release in 2017 with animated menus and extras, but it's also
they did it all.
Yeah, I mean, it's still in the very bad envelope packaging where you have to like pull the disc out of like a little flap. I hate it so much.
It's better for landfills and whatever. Yeah. But come on, man, think of me. Think of the ease of getting this out.
With how DVDs are just absolutely valueless now, it's weird to pay $30 for a new DVD set.
That's pretty weird.
Yeah, but commentaries are great. Please buy the season 18 DVD set. I want them to keep making new DVD sets. And those commentaries were recorded in 2015.
My God.
So they planned on having this released much earlier, or they had planned on having this release, period. So. I hope
2015.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Do they have to, they say line, they do like a start, like, we record this in 2015, so when we laugh at the very idea of Trump being president, that doesn't come up.
Matt Groening has a special intro where he says, this is the day we found out there wouldn't be a DVD set. And it's after they recorded the commentaries.
Wow.
It was like a dark day in history, but you complained so much that we're making this DVD. I love Matt Groening's intros.
That's awesome.
Even if it's clear, it's like, you never even saw this season, Matt.
This season is not. Yeah. I realized that in like season 11 here. Hearing his intros, like, you don't know what this was. Yeah. You're working on Futurama. You don't know this.
Listen to the Saddle Sore Galactica episode where everyone knows that it has a very bad critical reception, but Matt Groening's like, this is great. Like, he's just watching it for the first time.
He had been told he would hate it, and then he liked it, though. I'm looking forward to getting to that episode.
The Jockey Elves, yes.
It is one of my least favorites at the time, mostly because if there's one thing I really hated about the show is when they made Comic Book Guy into, obviously in the Pucci episode, Comic Book Guy was fans like us complaining about the show. But to have him literally say worst episode ever, or this happened, you did this in an episode before, I was like, all right, this is, you could have put some level of joke over this
instead of mocking a legitimate concern about. So season 18 DVDs are out. Check those out. And I guess we can talk a little bit about 2018. We are going to be doing a new limited series, like Talking Critic.
Yeah.
There might be a few weeks between the end of the Talking Critic and the new thing, but we'll try to fill those with content if we can. But like with Talking Critic, we sort of went away and worked for weeks, so we had a backlog of episodes to put live. So please stick with us, and we don't know what the series will be. You might have an inkling. Yes. You might have an inkling based on how the Christmas poll turned out, but we're going to have another poll and maybe that'll be different. But
if you want something that isn't Futurama to win, then bring out the vote, guys. Yes. Campaign hard.
I'm prepared DVD wise for either of the most likely outcomes.
Mm-hmm. I got to buy some old Futurama DVDs and the King of the Hill ones, but who knows? I was so foolish. I bought the Mission Hill DVDs again. I was like, oh, we're going to do Mission Hill next. It like, might not be next.
But it will eventually happen, and then we'll have Bill Oakley back to talk about it.
Hell yeah. And also, yeah, about the interviews too, I really loved our two interviews we did.
Yeah.
I think we've done a lot of great interviews this year. The Mike Scully one just kind of fell into our lap. Like, he followed me back on Twitter, and then I DM'd him, and he immediately DM'd me back like, yeah, I'd be up for it. Here's my phone number. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, he was super friendly, and I love that we apologized to him, and he took it well. Yes. So
it's passion. He appreciates passion, as he put it.
It was a fun moment. He's probably read much worse than our vague descriptions of insulting him online.
And then, meanwhile, Mimi Pond was also great. Unfortunately, Bob couldn't make it to that one. But
yeah, I'm still kind of sick.
You have
sick
podcast
for,
mouth.
I do.
Yeah.
I've been kissing too many microphones.
But yeah, it went well. I'd been wanting to reach out to her, or especially after that she was giving interviews where she talked about some of the stuff she talked about on the interview. I was like, I want to hear more of this from her. Like, and she shares quite a lot, and I saw some nice people say, like, just like the problem with Apu, this is exposing a thing about a show that I love that's not good news, but to understand the show, you kind of have to know this happened. Mm-hmm. So
we
yeah.
have great patrons and everyone. There was no anger over this, just like the problem with Apu. There mm-hmm. was no like, how dare she say this about the show? I think we have a great audience. So thanks yeah. so much for enjoying those interviews. And there was no crankiness about Mike Scully either. Like,
nope.
I think the history is starting to like turn around.
Get a little kinder
to him.
Well, it also helps that he's worked on so many good shows after that make people, I think, go, maybe he's not a hack or whatever they thought of him. And also, he's just like such a friendly, funny guy. They go, like, it's hard to hate you. Like,
yeah,
it's I think maybe Ian Maxtone Graham. I don't know if I have the same feelings.
We'll get him on the show. But we have some interviews coming up, big interviews.
Yes.
I don't want to talk about them to make sure they still happen. So, mm-hmm. But please stay tuned. Huge, huge interviews are coming soon.
I'm hoping in January you're going to hear two really cool ones on top of us doing a fucking live show. Can you believe it? Come
yes.
on. We are earning those dollars, folks.
Yes. So let's get into the comments for the episodes following the PTA disband. So the first one is 2 Dozen and 1 Greyhounds, and the first comment is by Scott Sutton, who says, Frank Welker was in the classic Kurt Russell Disney movies like The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes. It was weird hearing his voice coming out of a goofy-looking teen character before he started doing voices and animal sounds.
Wow.
And it's weird that our friend Chris Antista didn't know this because mm-hmm. he has a poster for this movie in his home. I don't know why he likes this. I think I've only seen the remake with like Alan Thicke or something like that.
Yeah, I never watched this.
Yeah.
I mean, it was Disney live action to me as a kid was like, turn the channel. Like,
yeah.
This is a night of Wonderful World of Disney. I am not watching. I came in for cartoons.
The intro was cool for those TV packages, but then it would be a boring 60s movie like the Apple Dumpling Gang or something.
Yeah. And after he finished that film, he must have gone straight into the Hanna-Barbera voice booth.
Yeah.
For like Scooby-Doo is like, it wasn't even 70s.
It was
like
69. Yeah. It's weird to think of that. Ooh, nice. And of course, Frank Welker, if you didn't remember, he does the voice of Santa's Little Helper on episodes where there's a major focus on Santa's Little Helper.
And he was also Nibbler on Futurama.
Yeah.
And a very noisy parrot in an episode you've already listened to,
yes.
but we haven't recorded at the time of recording this.
And who could forget Dear Slimer?
All right, the next person is Mark Kaiser, who says, you mentioned the Dalmatians watching a cartoon and how daring this was, but see, this was always unclear to me even to this day. If cartoon characters are watching cartoons, how am I to know this isn't them watching live action? I mean, we know that Itchy and Scratchy are animated and the Terrence and Philip are live action because they've made it clear in the stories, but Thunderbolt? I always assumed it was a live-action TV show starring a really talented dog actor.
Hmm.
Man, I didn't...
Yeah, I feel like The Simpsons has done this too, where to portray animation within an animated world, you make it much cruder, which is what the Happy Little Elves were.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what South Park did with Terrence and Phillip. I don't know. I have not seen 101 Dalmatians still. So I can't take this apart. But yeah, it is like a quandary to have in an animated movie. Like, how do you depict entertainment, but actually, you know, send the message that this is animation, or this is actually people or real things happening. Mm.
It's tough. It's a tough balance, I would think.
So Kiefer Folsom says, "Well, I'll be damned. This episode disproves something that ever since I first thought was a reference to the film 101 Dalmatians. Let me explain. During the scene where Bart and Lisa are herding the puppies into the laundry chute, which itself is based off the scene where two puppies escape Jasper and Horace in the film, there's a shot where we hold on the doorknob, it rattles, and it slowly turns with a slow zoom in at the end. For the longest time, ever since I first saw this episode 10 plus years ago, I thought this was a shot-for-shot scene straight from the movie with a close-up and zoom on a doorknob in the Escape from the DeVille Manor scene. However, I recently watched the scene from 101 Dalmatians to discover, my surprise, no such scene exists in the movie. Though this could be during the scene Alf Clausen's score does closely mirror the music from the scene in the movie, and I just assumed it was lifted from 101 Dalmatians. Also, during the See My Vest number, the maid that cameos while musically being a spoof of Mrs. Potts from Beauty and the Beast, her design is Nanny from 101 Dalmatians, just one of those awesome attentions to detail."
Wow, I didn't get that, but that's right. The Miss Potts woman does look just like the nanny from it.
I only knew the Miss Potts reference. I did not. I will see this movie one day.
I completely forgot the nanny, even though she's totally there in every other scene, which again, it's like, man, what? They're not down-to-earth characters. They're actually more, the human leads in it are kind of like the Friends people of just like, oh, you're rich. Like, you have a fucking nanny and live in a house in London.
But I think our friend Kiefer was attacked by the Mandela effect. The Berenstain beers? Bears were never real. Wait, Berenstain. It was Berenstain.
Yeah. All right. From the PTA disbands, we have some comments here. J.R. Rawls says, "Would you guys ever consider looking through old alt.tv.simpsons threads from the time the episode originally aired and picking some quotes from it to represent what people thought of it at the time when it originally aired? To me, a big part of the point of Talking Simpsons is how the episodes were viewed in 2017 versus 20 plus years ago, and I think it would be a neat little feature." You know, I like that idea, but we put so much time into the research already. It's a lot to pour over.
Yeah, not to say that we're working too hard, but I also think our shows are kind of long enough, and not to insult J.R. Rawls' opinion, but this has sort of been done before. I've seen it happen in a lot of, like, I used to follow
it was on the AV Club.
Yeah, when Nathan Rabin was writing the classic Simpsons reviews before that site turned to shit.
No offense to anybody who works at the AV Club now. I'm sure you're doing your best in a website that is certainly pivoting somewhere to obscurity, probably.
But all of the writers I liked who left to form the Dissolve were not shy in telling people why they left, and it's only changed more since then. But yeah, I think it's been done a lot, and I don't know what there would be to do. I don't know what we would get out of it outside of making fun of people who can't defend themselves, although I did that on the Wind Waker episode of Retronauts, which was fun. That was sort of a one-time thing. maybe if we reach like a really low point in the show, we might read reviews of an episode.
Perhaps for Principal and the Pauper, if we were to pick one.
That'd be a good moment. I don't think it would be a recurring feature, but maybe we'll do it every once in a while.
So, I'm seeing some of the reactions to The Last Jedi actually reminding me of Principal and the Pauper hate. And also, speaking of Nathan Rabin, that is a Patreon I give to happily. I want to support him. He basically did a post that was like, "Oh, this is me too." Like, I'm just like, what do I fucking do with my life?
Yeah, like, his hopelessness made me like super hopeless. Like, oh my God, if Nathan Rabin can't make it, what am I doing?
And he is so goddamn prolific. Like, he writes like, it seems like 5,000 words a day he posts. Like, he is stuck with, I think, once a day, putting up a review of a different Weird Al song to go through every song in Weird Al's accordion-filled biography.
I mean, having worked from the internet, that just shows the failure of internet media companies that a guy like Nathan Rabin cannot have a full-time job somewhere.
He started his Patreon because the AV Club, which should be fucking enthusiastic that they could get him to do My World of Flops there again, they're just like, no more freelance money. It's just not worth $300 a month. Like, fuck you, AV Club. Your website, you built a worse looking website that...
Oh, you can't find anything anymore. Sorry. The AV Club was my favorite website.
I read 8 million articles on the AV Club.
And when I joined 1UP in 2011, which is just coming up again for some reason, it was my goal. Like, I want to do AV Club stuff on this website. So it hurt to see it change into like a more gawkery, ask celebrities goofy questions style website, which is like everything now.
Yep, everything is just like...
And then the Dissolve died, which made me cry.
When you see this Star Wars thing with the... The media appearances for the most recent Star Wars is just, oh, this is what media just is now. You make them dance. Like, you don't, who has an interview with Luke Skywalker when you could just have him read a comment from some website or have him act out a scene or just like.
You could make him unbox something funny.
Yeah. Or make Poe Dameron read funny tweets sent to him. Like, it's just. I mean, that's entertaining. If I had them in front of me, I wouldn't maybe want to do a straight interview either, just because what are you going to ask Mark Hamill that he hasn't heard 8 billion times? Well, meanwhile, like, Mike Scully has not done a ton of interviews. I like doing interviews like that.
Yeah, and they're for an audience who appreciates it. So Robert Shelvin says, y'all mentioned that it's amazing there isn't a band named Purple Monkey Dishwasher, but I've encountered the next best thing. There's an amazing beer from Evil Genius Beer Company by the same name that I got from a Beer of the Month Club once. I was happy enough with the name, but man, is it good too. I am not affiliated with them in any way either. That's too bad. I want the beer. Just wanted to spread the word of two of my loves combining. And I looked this up. It is a chocolate and peanut butter stout, which sounds great. And
you're quite a beer connoisseur, Bob.
I probably am not compared to the big beer snobs out there, but... I have to say, the only thing more embarrassing than naming than the names of strains of weed are the names of craft beers. So yes, it only makes sense that Purple Monkey Dishwasher is a beer, and I will try it if I can find it. I love drinking embarrassing beer names. I like Breaking Bud.
Break it. Oh, God.
Because it's like the hops, and it's a very embarrassing beer to drink.
Boy. All right. Daniel Freetag says, I had a similar experience with snow days, too. It was always frustrating because the school board was downtown and would make decisions based on what the road conditions were like there, whereas I lived out in the country and my school was into the city but nowhere near downtown, so conditions would be much worse. There were days when my usual 50-minute bus ride would take twice as long. 50 minutes already? God damn. And a couple of times they were where we got stuck in the snow. I'm extremely thankful I don't have to do that shit anymore. Man, you feel like there would be like a huge hashtag killing kids movement or something for that. Like,
yeah, I was happy to have a mildly fretful mother as a kid, because even if the school wasn't canceled, she'd be like, you're not going to school today.
Oh,
you're not going
awesome.
Out there. Yeah, so just like, well, my mom doesn't want me to die in a fiery ball of metal with a bunch of other kids.
Instead
so.
Of telling you, like, I went through worse snow and I turned out fine. Go see if you live.
Yeah, but, I mean, in Youngstown, we have a real, whatever kills me makes me stronger, or whatever doesn't kill me makes me stronger spirit. And I remember I had the worst job of that time, working in the basement of a bank doing nothing.
Wow.
I joined a company that was going out of business. Sound familiar? And the guy
you're
who was
the problem here, Bob.
Yes, and the guy who was supposed to train me didn't feel like it. So I would just go every day and just read books in my cubicle, making $10 an hour. And one day, it was the worst snowstorm I'd ever driven through, and I barely made it home. And I call work the next morning. I'm like, I'm not coming to work. And everyone made fun of me when I came back the day after. And I was like, you dumb idiots.
Yeah,
like, you almost died to come to live in this big basement. sorry.
For what? Like,
$10 an hour. Yeah.
Who cares?
To do nothing. To help swirl the drain. So.
Yeah. Swirl the drain.
Yes. Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Okay, so Alex Pettigan says, just want to throw out this super deep cut I found watching through some episodes recently. In this episode, Data calls Pop Goes the Weasel the forbidden music, whereas in Lisa's date with Density, Mr. Ludgrow includes Pop Goes the Weasel as a song they'll play during an encore at the band show. I hope someone got fired for that blunder.
Perhaps Largo changed his mind on Pop Goes the Weasel in between those three seasons.
Yeah.
Nobody likes Milhouse.
I was watching an episode from this season on Hulu, and Bart was being punished, and he had to write on the board, and he was like, he discovered putting the chalks into the holder.
I saw that too. I was like, wait, no, Lisa like, did that.
You did that 20 years. No, he taught Lisa to do that.
Oh, that's right.
When she
yeah.
got in trouble. So I was like, man, I wish I was on staff to be like, no, you did that joke.
Yeah.
Take it away.
Oh, well. You know, They're going home at 5 o'clock these days.
It's
true. They don't really care to remember every joke.
They don't have any. They have fewer cranky, childless writers who want to stay till 3 in the morning until the joke is absolutely right.
So Turd Sampson says, as a former teacher, I can add a little to the discussion of corporal punishment in public schools. The district I was teaching in still widely used corporal punishment, mostly at the elementary schools, but it wasn't something that was ever really discussed. The reason we knew about it was that every year we'd get a preemptive email from the district that an organization was about to call out the district, and then in the next few days, our district would be recognized as one of the leaders in corporal punishment for administering over 1,000 spankings a year. The basic idea was the parents could opt in to corporal punishment, and then the principal would take the student in their office and spank them in secret. That sounds... So, in case you were wondering, lots of students in rural South Carolina still get their asses whooped.
Of course, it's proven to work, obviously. Yeah.
Well, and if there's one thing I think we should do, it is put a adult secretly in the room with a kid and have him do things to his butt. Like, I think it's just a good idea. Yeah, it's totally normal.
I mean, whoever wants to be that guy, surely, you know, is on the right track.
Totally normal guy. Normal thing to do. And yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, corporal punishment, like the one time I got spanked, I think it is something I got spanked sometimes by my dad, but I only got spanked in school once, and it still sticks in me. Every once in a while it bubbles up. I'm like, oh, that was a horrible feeling then.
That was wrong.
Push it back down. Like, and yeah, it was fucking wrong. And I was lucky to, like, my one spanking, I think, was administered by teachers who hated doing it. I think I was like, 'cause I was bawling my eyes out. I was like kindergarten or first grade and in the cloakroom with two teachers. And I'm also just like, you're pre-sexualizing kids with this stuff, or at the very least you're fucking them up. Yeah, like, in a lot of ways you don't understand.
You're supposed to trust adults and then they can hurt you physically. It's it's a bad thing to do to a kid's brain, but it's
normal. Apparently
I don't plan on having kids, but if I did, I wouldn't want another adult to hit them. I mean, I wouldn't hit them either, but also I found the only effect of spanking is 20 years later, the people who get spanked are the ones on Facebook that are saying, every kid should be spanked. I was spanked and I turned out just fine. Yeah. Hit every kid.
Todd Glass has a great joke about that where he says, like, I got spanked and I turned out normal. Well, that's not for you to say. Why don't we ask your family and see how normal they think you are?
Why are you so fixated on pro-spanking propaganda? Yes. That's not that normal.
No.
Hit every child in the ass. Is it my turn now? Sorry, I'm losing track of this. So talking critic comment time. And we have a few from All the Duke's Men that in no way reminds us of Trump in any way.
No.
And Jack Wofford says, I think this episode would be an appropriate time to post this pic I took. And you can check out that pic on our Patreon in the comments. This is the Wall of Fame in Scottsville, Kentucky, where Charles Napier is from.
Wow.
Yes, it's very small. And yes, Mr. Napier is the most famous person on it. Fun fact, this is where my mom's family is from. And Charles Napier was my aunt's high school English teacher before he left town and took up acting full time in the 60s.
That's awesome.
Anyway, thought you folks might enjoy seeing it. And hopefully, like me, you will always now refer to Charles Napier as successful actor and lovable tough guy, which is what the inscription is on this memorial. It's not a memorial. He was still alive when they made it.
It's quite a photo of him on it, too. Yeah, it was. I think that's why it's not a memorial. If it was a memorial, they might have picked a slightly younger version of him. But that's really cool. Again, that he never did a proper autobiography, which is very sad.
God,
but
his life.
Speaking of the AV Club, his random roles he did with the AV Club is amazing.
It's great.
Him talking about doing drugs, meeting Hunter S. Thompson, just having fun, being a cool guy who then got to play the meanest hillbillies in the world. I think he's kind of like the Walton Goggins of his day. I love Walton Goggins. I think he's an amazing actor, but he always has to play a racist redneck in everything because, like, oh, you got a Southern accent. You're really great at that. And you have no chin. All right, then you're a big redneck. And I think I heard an interview with him where he's like, I'm kind of tired of playing this role.
Yeah, in fact, so doing Talking Critic has made me miss Charles Napier even more. It just made me realize, man, I love his voice. I love his delivery. I love Duke Phillips. But Al Jean and Mike Reese, or sorry, rather, Al Jean brings him back a few times on The Simpsons in his reign.
Oh, yeah,
so
that's true.
He won't be out of our lives completely in this podcast network.
Oh, God. Vote for Duke.
Yeah.
Vote for Duke.
Vote for Duke.
Last comment here is the ghost of Wayne Knight from Jurassic Park says, you guys brought up Stockdale a couple times, and I think he's an example of getting one of the rawest deals in American politics, being remembered only as an SNL caricature of a crazy man. Stockdale really is largely unsung American hero like John McCain. He was a POW in Vietnam from 1965 to 1973, including years in solitary, and was part of the Alcatraz gang, in quotes, which helped organize American POWs to endure North Vietnamese torture, and was described by fellow POW Lieutenant Coker as, he was probably the strongest, most exemplary leader of the whole North Vietnamese POW environment. His wife also helped raise the issue of POW treatment as an American negotiating point during the Paris Peace Accords. The Paris Peace Accords. Also, he later wrote Courage Under Fire, testing Epictetus doctrines. Sorry, I don't know the word.
I think Kid Icarus said it.
Kid Icarus doctrines in a human laboratory, a short essay still used by the armed forces to train service members to survive mentally and spiritually in long-term captivity, which you can read for free by just Googling the name.
Yeah,
I couldn't say.
Unfortunately, he was hamstrung by one soundbite that SNL mm-hmm. chose to interpret literally. Like, who am I? Why am I here? That that was a rhetorical question, as if to say, I'm an outsider, not I don't know where I am or who I am.
It was the start of a speech, not a lost man, but it also hurt that Phil Hartman was just so good at playing him and being funny.
And I think that these kind of gaffes will not happen anymore because of President Trump. And everything he said on the record that's been recorded is nothing compared to what Stockdale said, is nothing compared to Dean Howard. Is it Howard Dean?
Yeah!
Having Howard one Dean, excited scream as if it's like, I believe I'll vote for a third party. That man is too excited to be president.
Ooh, I need a boring guy like John Kerry.
Yeah.
No, that, I also think it was a weird choice, an old school choice by Ross Perot of like, well, I need a veteran. Like, people trust a veteran of the armed services. Like, that's not what people really wanted in the 90s.
Yeah. Not even in the 2000s. It's just like, John Kerry's a war hero, but he wasn't enough of a war hero.
Exactly. Which, like, God damn it, that whole Swiss boat veterans for truth, that was quite a, how'd he fucking fail that? Because he's a fucking loser like all Democrats. I'll tell you right here. As a left-leaning person who trusted the Democrats to try to win something, they are the loseriest losers in loser town. Even when they win, they lose. Like, I'm really pissed off at them right now for they're like, oh, we're not going to back down from the Dream Act. And they're like, we are backing down from the Dream Act.
We have to work with our enemies.
If only we compromise. Like, yeah, somebody put it as only who wins something and then immediately tries to lick the shit-covered boots of the guy they beat? Why would you do that? Well, it infuriates me so much. Just fucking losers. They got to stop being losers and actually have some goddamn spine. But anyway.
We're sitting in the wake of the not only the net neutrality rollbacks, but we're also sitting in the wake of the tax bill, which just passed today.
It just passed
today. And let me tell you, we are small business owners. This will not help us in any way.
Absolutely.
By small
not.
Business owners are like, do you make almost $1 million with your two businesses? Well, we're going to help you.
We'll help you out. Yeah.
I'm sure we're getting so super fucked with all
of
this.
Quite, yeah. And I mean, honestly, the life, think about this, folks, socialism or barbarism. That's the choice we're left with here. And that the life of a person who has $1 billion or $10 billion, their life will be exactly the same. That $9 billion should go to anybody else. And
Talking Simpsons turned into communist propaganda so gradually, I didn't even notice.
I think it was like Hillary Clinton's loss made me just go like, why'd I even compromise on anything? Like, fuck this. They lost. Like, I lost compromising on a candidate.
We need to fight as hard as our enemies do. Not be like, how can we help you, sir?
Sir, on the West Wing. The West Wing is trash. I fucking hate that show so much.
No talking West Wing from us.
No way. All right. Sorry.
Hopefully we don't alienate any of you. We love you and also your money. But thanks so much for giving. This has been a fantastic year for us. It's been a bad year for lots of other reasons, but we're happy to have you as our audience. We're happy to make this content. I'm so happy I don't have to go to a miserable, shitty job and then do the thing I love after it. I can do this for a living and it's great. I've never worked harder and I've been more proud of what I've done.
Absolutely. I was looking back on all the things I didn't get to make and all the time I had to spend not making things, but explaining why I could make something to someone who wouldn't let me make something, that I just love making shit and having it be appreciated and making basically the same money without a goddamn manager in my ear every second I like moved my finger. Mm-hmm. And it's thanks to all of you and your support in 2017. May that all possible. I hope it continues and even grows more in 2018 and we can do even more stuff and be even busier because this is the busyness I love. Like and I get to work from home when I watch my boyfriend have to wake up at 7 a.m. and then shower and get on a train. I'm like, sucker.
I am like Homer in King Size Homer. Gas brake honk. Gas brake honk. Punch, punch, punch.
Honk, honk, punch.
Yeah.
Gas, gas, gas. Yeah, especially, yeah, I don't want to end up like Ned when in that dream sequence when a bunch of monkeys got onto the highway right. and were attacking people. I can't wait to get a King-Size Hummer, which I believe is a season 7 episode.
Yeah.
And it is onward to season 7.
Yes.
We will see. Every season has felt like the best season we've done. I think that'll stop in season 8. But maybe we'll see with season 7. I believe you've been on record in the past saying that's your favorite season.
It is. I don't know. 6 is really burning hot for me.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell at this point. We'll wait till we get to season 7. But I love Oakley and Weinstein so much. It's going to be hard. Mm-hmm. So thanks so much for listening in 2017. We will see you in 2018 with even more podcasts, another episode of Talk to the Audience. We'll see you then.
Wow, infotainment.